And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, we're speaking at a great remove, as it turns out. You're over in England, I'm here in Pennsylvania. You've been attending the graduation of your son from Cambridge, who earned himself a well-deserved degree in land planning, land management, and at Cambridge.
Master's degree,
right. And who demonstrated in his graduation thesis that the fracking industry in Northeast Pennsylvania was a disaster for Northeast Pennsylvania, that the population, which was falling anyway, the fall was much greater, and that increased fall in population was directly attributable to the effects of the fracking industry, whereas, of course, the gas industry claimed that they were bringing peace and prosperity to Northeast Pennsylvania. Just the opposite was the result. And it's a big issue in England right now, too.
Yes, the government almost fell over that.
Well, the government...
fell
anyway, right, exactly. But, as I mentioned to you, the last four Tory prime ministers in England all graduated from Oxford. Murray had the good sense to go to Cambridge. So, good for you,
well,
Murray.
Cambridge had the good sense to accept them.
Well, that's also true. So, what have you noticed? I mean, I'm sure you've talked about political stuff. You've been there a few days.
Yeah.
When you're an addict, you're an addict. You must have talked about politics to people.
Well, we have. And I think we have to talk about that they've got, we have two different systems and two different reactions to things as to what's happening. First of all, this is going to be the third prime minister in England in the matter of, 3 months, thereabouts?
Third prime minister, fourth chancellor.
Fourth chancellor of the Exchequer, which is the equivalent of our Secretary of the Treasury.
Except he has much more power.
Yes, yeah. He runs the economy, in essence. Yeah. Or she runs the economy, whatever.
Whoever it is, right.
But with the parliamentary system, what happened is the party itself took out their prime minister. They did not stand behind her in this case, and essentially told her that she had to leave.
But the reason they told her she had to leave was because she trashed the economy.
Yeah, well, she trashed the economy. And she
did it in 2 weeks. It was a remarkable performance. She effectively had 2 weeks in power. She's been there 44 days, but most of the 44 days the country was in mourning because the Queen died and there was no government activity. She had about 2 weeks of policy making, and she managed to get thrown out in 2 weeks. She was the shortest serving prime minister in 500 years of British political history.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that we had comparable in the United States to this was back in, this was 1974, when Barry Goldwater and Hugh Scott, the former senator from Pennsylvania, Scott, who was the minority leader in the Senate, and the representatives of the House of Representatives, the Republicans, went up to the White House and told Richard Nixon that he was done, that there was going to be an impeachment vote, and that they could not hold the line, and that he was going to get impeached. And in the Senate, he didn't have enough votes to prevent him from being thrown out of office. But in the modern Republican Party has no ability, no leadership, no wherewithal to stand up to Donald Trump, even though he literally placed members of his party in Congress in jeopardy of their lives.
Picky.
Yeah, some people say insurrection, some people say sedition, other people just say tourists, right?
Right.
And so we had that.
There's an even more direct comparison, really, to be made between the British situation and the American situation, because the policies that Truss tried to implement and which were so disastrous for the British economy immediately are precisely the policies of the Republican Party. These are the policies of austerity, the policies of small government, the policy of cutting taxes for the rich and the corporations. And she did that, and within one day, the currency collapsed. One day. Yeah. And these are precisely the policies that every faction of the American Republican Party is promoting. And what they're really fighting about is who can do it more effectively.
Yeah, quicker and worse.
Yeah. What some of the Republicans have against Trump is that he's inept in applying these policies, and they claim they could do it better. But it would be the same disaster for the American people as it has shown to be for the British people. But the British system enabled them to get rid of them quickly.
Right. What's remarkable about what the Republicans are doing right now is how directly they are aiming at good things for the people and doing so openly right before a key election. A couple months ago, we had Rick Scott, who desires to replace Mitch McConnell as the Republican leader in the Senate, came out with a plan to effectively undercut Social Security and Medicare. He wants to have it reauthorized every 5 years.
Now, I don't think people realize what that means. He doesn't want this to be a continuing program. He means for it to have to be voted as a program every 5 years, and that the appropriation should be voted every year.
Right.
That means there's no Medicare. That means there's no Medicaid. End of story. Forget the pension system that 28% of the American people depend upon for their old age.
Right. And, and this year with Social Security actually getting one of the largest boosts in history. They package this as reform, and people actually buy it. That's one of the things.
And Rick Scott, by the way, personally, Rick Scott, he's a criminal. Rick Scott narrowly escaped being sent to jail for cheating the government of hundreds of millions of dollars in Medicaid reimbursements. He was the head of a healthcare company, HCA, I think it was called. And the company was guilty of defrauding the government by hundreds of millions of dollars. He was the CEO of that company. He escaped by the skin of his teeth being sent to jail. The company had to restore millions and millions of dollars to the government. He's the great paragon of virtue who would like to cut us all off from Medicaid and Medicare.
Yet the people of Florida elected him.
I know that.
Which speaks
including a lot of people who are on Medicare.
Yeah, it speaks a lot about the weakness of the Democratic Party in Florida over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
But now the members of the House have come out, and Kevin McCarthy has come out and essentially said that as soon as we regain power, we are going to repeal the things that the Democrats gave to people, like the cap on drug prices, the ability for Medicare to negotiate prices, the cap on insulin drugs.
On the cost of insulin drugs, right.
On the cost of it, capping it at $35, capping the total cost of your Medicare drugs, I guess it's what, Plan B, at $1,000 a year. So you're not broken by these things. And then we also had the fact that Republicans came out and have sued Joe Biden and the federal government to stop the forgiveness of student loans.
Like 22 million former students have applied in 1 week for this relief. There's 40 million who are eligible. In 1 week, 22 million applied for the relief. The Republicans don't want to let anybody have a nickel. And you know what their argument is? Their argument is that the Republican states who somehow have a connection with collecting this money would lose out on revenue if the money was prepaid, because the interest cost that they would like to collect over years, they wouldn't be able to collect because the government would have canceled the debt, and so they will lose out on revenue. Can you believe that?
Yeah, you can believe it because it's what's happening.
If that's not naked class warfare, I don't know what is.
Well, not only that, but Joe Biden went after them saying, hey, some of you people got PPP loans and you got that forgiven, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, $180,000.
Isn't that proper? What's wrong with that?
Well, I get mine, but you can't have yours.
Yeah, exactly. Well, how about all the companies that got PPP loans, the right. point of which was to maintain their payroll, was to give them the money to keep people on the payroll. They didn't use it for payroll. 80% of them did not use it for payroll. They did something else with it. They paid operating expenses of some other sort. They paid dividends. They did whatever, but they didn't use it to keep people on the payroll. And then it was forgiven. Isn't that theft?
Well, it's taking under false pretenses.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. But that's legit.
That's legit.
But forgiving the student loans, that's making people spineless.
The fact is, though, it kept businesses alive, and that was a good thing. And don't forget that under Biden, more people have gained jobs than anyone in recent history. The voters don't seem to really be able to grasp that, and part of that is the fault of the Democrats in their messaging to point that out.
Well, they're not pointing it out, right? Which campaign is pointing it out? I don't know which campaign.
They're relying on the abortion issue.
On abortion.
That's played out.
The only Democrat I see, or Democrat-aligned politician I see making a point about this is Bernie. And I then see articles saying, oh, if Bernie makes a big point about this, we're going to lose the election. If Bernie and the Democrats don't make a big point about this, they're going to lose the election.
Yeah. Don't forget, there were a lot of Trump voters that would have voted for Bernie.
That's exactly right.
On the same thing.
That's exactly right.
I mean, very few. I mean, you got Tim Ryan in Ohio doing economic class warfare campaigning, but you don't see the rest of them really doing that. And what we've seen over the last couple of weeks is a momentum shift towards the Republicans.
That's right. Well, you would do expect that, right? I mean, that does happen in every election campaign. There's shifts up and down.
Right.
But there's got to be an underlying trend. And the underlying trend for the Democrats is not going to be there if they can't explain to working people why they should vote for them.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Pennsylvania, there's some polls that show that Fetterman and Oz are now tied.
Right.
We really don't know that. We're going to have to see, because the polling is really, really sketchy. The only polls that have been consistent are Shapiro and Mastriano, with Shapiro maintaining about a 10-point lead. But as you and I have talked about, there is this underground that was representing Mastriano. He came out with some other, or his campaign aide, Jenna Ellis, who's also trying to stay out of jail, I believe.
She's one of Giuliani's cohort of lawyers promoting the Stop the Steal crap.
Yeah, she came out and attacked Josh Shapiro, saying that he really isn't Jewish enough.
You're not Jewish enough? What did he have to do to be more Jewish?
I'm sure they
cut off the foreskin. They got to cut the whole thing off?
Yeah. Like, she's the arbiter of how Jewish this person is. But, of course, Mastriano's running this Christian nationalist campaign.
Yeah, he blows the chauffeur, you know.
Yeah. And then we had Trump this week also issuing another one of his anti-Semitic diatribes, which he doesn't really – I don't think he realizes it's anti-Semitic. He just, it's the classic tropes that Jews have dual loyalty and that I brought you great business, so you guys are big in business, things like that, with money.
Trump is so deep in the wool anti-Semitic that he doesn't grasp even what anti-Semitism is. It is so deeply ingrained in his culture and his outlook on life that he has no way to avoid it. That's how he grew up. That's the people he's with. That's how he thinks. That's how he speaks. And if you call him anti-Semitic, he'd look at you and he'd be shocked. he's got, how can I be anti-Semitic when I have a daughter who's married a Jew? You know, right. It's like, how can I be a racist? I have Jewish, so my best friends are black, right?
Yeah.
But he also said about Kirshner, according to Maggie Haberman, is he really religious or he just doesn't like to work? That's because he doesn't answer the phone on Saturdays.
Right. Meanwhile, another one of Trump's henchmen got sentenced this week, Steve Bannon.
Why isn't he in jail? How did he manage to stay out of jail?
Well, traditionally, the nature of the crime is not one where they would jail you pending an appeal. There's some crimes where you get jailed immediately, you know, lock them up, goes into effect. But others, they're allowed to perfect their appeal and then stay out pending that. Now, the question is how long that's going to take. The circuit court for the D.C. Circuit, we'll see what they say. And then we'll see if the Bannon, of course, is buying time. And whether or not he'll then appeal to the Supreme Court, although the Supreme Court's been acting fairly quickly and dismissing a lot of these things. I don't see them stepping into Steve Bannon's case. They've got enough other things to get the public riled up about. You know, one of them is an offshoot of Bannon's view of, you know, remember his idea was to deconstruct the administrative state.
Yep.
And you were mentioning to me beforehand that there's a case now out of, I guess, the district court in Ohio that goes a long ways towards that.
That's right. This court ruled on Friday that the Consumer Protection Finance Bureau is unconstitutional. It's a legal point, but it's directly political, of course. The reasoning is it's unconstitutional because that bureau gets its funding from the Federal Reserve, not from Congress. The case argues, the Republicans who brought the case argue that if the only agencies that are constitutional are the ones that get funded by Congress. Well, if the court finds that that's so, a lot of agencies in the federal government are going to be declared unconstitutional, including the Federal Reserve, which doesn't get funded by Congress. Now, figure out how you're going to run American capitalism that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it basically destroys the economy.
It doesn't seem to matter to these people.
No, they're ideologues, and they think, well, the private sector will pick all this up, and we'll be able to, you know, cash in on it. But no, that isn't going to happen.
I mean, there's a reason why there's a Federal Reserve. History forced it to be developed. It was developed, you know, as a result of failures of every other way of managing an ascendant capitalist economy, which then became the largest economy in the world. Right. Now, get rid of it, and what's the fallback? Now, you might think to yourself, well, maybe these Republicans are really all agents of Putin who want to get rid of American capitalism. That would explain things. Nothing else would.
Well, there is a lot of agency of Putin going around.
But, you know, that's just a joke. Even Putin has a Federal Reserve. Every country has a Federal Reserve.
They have. That's right. They have that. But, you know, our situation goes back to Andrew Jackson and the Second Bank of the United States. And that's a little complicated to explain here in this show. But in any event, you know, we had all these crashes and panics before we
didn't have a national currency. Currency was put out by every bank. You had 1,000 currencies. They were worth nothing. Anyway, the point is, you can study the financial history of the American system, but the point is that by the 20th century, when American capitalism established itself, when the agrarian society was gone, when the manufacturing society was in full bloom and the financial structure was being developed, that the financial society, that the manufacturing society required, that's when you had the birth of the Federal Reserve in order to satisfy the financing needs of a developed capitalist country that had an international reach.
Right.
These people don't know their history and they don't care about it. They have some cockeyed ideological view of the world, which, you know, like Margaret Thatcher says, there's no such thing as society, there's just individuals. And when people like Liz Truss try to implement that vision, everything falls apart because it's cockeyed and nonsensical.
Yeah. Well, you saw where Ben Bernanke won the Nobel Prize,
yes,
one of the in economics, and he essentially, back in the crash in 2008, saved the American economy because he understood the history of the Great Depression and what had gone wrong, and he understood Keynesian economics as opposed to Hoover economics or whatever you want to call it, or Hayek economics, and that
I call it hoo-ha economics. Hoo-ha.
Hoo-ha. Okay. Hoo-ha economics.
Hoo-ha.
So
the point is that the if you manage to economize, if you're a guy who has a horse and you manage to economize by feeding the horse less and less, the horse is going to come back and drop dead. And that's what happens with the economy. You manage to starve the people and produce austerity and reduce their purchasing power to nothing. Your economy drops dead.
Well, the way they look at it is we don't have to feed the horse anymore.
I know that, but the horse needs to get fed anyway.
Yeah, but you need the horse.
That's right.
People have to work.
That's right.
To make the money, and they don't seem to see it. Yeah. It's not quite analogous, but it reminds me of the anecdote about the head of, what is it, GM, taking Walter Reuther, the head of the UAW, around the factory and pointing out all these new robots that were going to, make it more efficient and make more money for the company. And Reuther said to him, yeah, but none of these robots is ever going to buy a General Motors car.
Right, exactly. That's the whole point. That's exactly right.
Well, destroy your economic base. I mean, that was the one thing Henry Ford understood. If you pay your workers enough, they can buy your products.
That's right. What people don't realize, Henry Ford was a rotten guy, an anti-Semite, a fascist, a supporter of Hitler, but he understood that he had to maintain purchasing power.
Yeah. You talk about Henry Ford, and you talk about the heads of GM. We're seeing, and you mentioned the billionaires. And we're seeing them playing into politics at a level that this really isn't. They may be good at what they do in a business, but they are not very good at knowing or getting the big picture in politics or the economy. We have Elon Musk, who made a horrendous error in bidding $54.20 for Twitter, and is jeopardizing a lot of his, not only Twitter, but some of the Tesla value, because he's had to sell so much stock, which lowers the price of Tesla stock, in order to finance this deal. And now he comes out and says, then he tried to weasel out of the deal, and now he doesn't have enough banking backing, because they realize what he's paying for it is way more than Tesla's worth. Now he's coming out and saying, well, I'll cut 75% of Tesla's workforce. Which in essence...
Tesla's or Twitter's? Twitter's workforce.
Not Twitter. Yeah, Twitter's.
Yeah.
That guts the company.
Yeah, right.
But he doesn't care. He says, well, then we'll just have free speech all over the place and allow the charlatans and the rumor mongers and the Russian bots, essentially, to run things. And then we have the guy who's funding Blake Masters, Peter Thiel, who openly says he doesn't really believe in democracy. He says it's incompatible with freedom, not realizing, of course, that...
He's right. It's incompatible with his freedom to do what he wants to do, to extort money from wherever he wants to extort it. That's the freedom he's concerned about. He's not wrong. Yeah. It's his, but he's one-sided. He's only talking about his freedom.
Right. Well, that's
your freedom depends on repressing his freedom.
Well, not just repressing it, but freedom through democracy is what's allowed all these companies to exist and prosper.
That's true. But what they don't like is that if they were left to their own devices, they would pollute the earth. They would sell you sawdust instead of flour, which they did in bread. I mean, all of these regulations, the food and drug regulations and all the other regulations, they didn't drop from the sky because it rained one day. Moses didn't come down from the mount. It was because there was a series of horrible practices that corporations carried out in order to maximize their profits that the average working person and consumers said, enough. I'm not buying adulterated food. I want water that's pure. I want to be able to breathe the air. You can't do these things. You can't operate in the way that poisons me. We're going to have regulation. And that's how regulation got born. And yes, that is a restriction on the freedom of investors and businessmen to do what they like to maximize their profits. They have to sell pure food. They have to sell pure drugs, right? And so forth.
Yeah. Well, the big thing is what they really want to do is they're socialists at heart. They want to privatize their profits but socialize the cost.
That's called fascism. The difference between fascism and socialism in many respects is only who's being served. Now, it's true, the fascists are also racist. But the principal difference is who's being served. You can't have socialism that only serves, that serves corporate enterprise, because socialism is supposed to serve the working people.
Yeah. Well, you know, you talk about things, and I was talking to someone during Murray's graduation at the luncheon there out there. And, you know, we were talking about, we're getting back to where we started, the extraction industry. And the fact is, you know, in Pennsylvania with the coal industry, it being northeastern Pennsylvania, all the wealth they created, a lot of it just went away. You know, the coal mines were owned by the railroads were owned by the big banks. And you did not get a repeat of the investments that you needed beyond the what was needed for extraction. And then we had all the social costs, the cave-ins, the mine fires, the coal dumps, the polluted waters, the black lung, and all of that tab wound up being paid for essentially for the most part by the taxpayer, because those you still needed to clean these things up and prevent these disasters.
In my county, the natural gas industry, one company has exported profits of $2 billion a year, each year and every year, for the last 12 years, out of natural gas. In the same period of time, as Murray demonstrated in his thesis, the population of the county declined by 11%. In other words, none of the wealth extracted by that industry stayed in the county, because if it had, people would have moved into the county. Instead,
would have been invested.
Yeah. Instead, 11% left.
Well,
so the pattern continues.
Yeah. Although I guess you say if you have less people, the per capita income of the county goes up because there's less people, but it may not go up because they may have less money involved.
They took more out.
Right. And
the industry isn't taxed.
Right. I mean, some of the businesses you started there, hotels and restaurants, they're no longer filled up.
They're filled up. They don't exist. Anyway, it's an interesting thing to compare the horror that is currently besetting England, Britain, with what's going on here. The policies are the same. The trust failed policies, the Tory trust failed policies, are the Republican Party's policies. And we have an election coming up. Let's not elect a truss.
Amen to that.
Well, have a good trip back.
Thank you.
Once you get back, you can get acclimated and your feet will be on the ground, and we'll talk again next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.